This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Tied for third.
Let's bring Chris involved in this, because Chris has actually been to the Masters and is a big golf aficionado. Chris Vitor, Cleveland.com, joins us here on The Fan. What's up, Chris?
What's going on, guys? How are you?
We're just talking a little Masters here. All right, Spencer, go ahead.
Do you trust that this is the year that Rory finally gets it done, Chris? Should we be buying this fool's gold again, or is he going to choke on Sunday?
No, I just feel like there's something about Augusta that's in his head mentally, and it's a hurdle that he needs to get over. There's some demons there, so it's hard for me to fully buy into him. He played great today. What a bounce back round for Rory. He played great yesterday with the exception of two holes. But I just feel like that lurks around the corner, whether it's Saturday, whether it's Sunday. Like, those moments, those always lurk when it comes to Rory. The good thing that he's got going for him is that, you know, Justin Rose is at the top of the leaderboard, and nobody really believes that he's going to put it together for four straight rounds. So, you know, basically Bryson DeChambeau stands between him and in the top there, and that's a pretty good place for Rory to be. But I do think there's something mentally about playing Augusta because of what it means to him to win this one.
All right, Chris, you've been to Augusta. I want to float a theory by you before we get into some basketball. I think every sporting event would be better if it was like how the Masters is, where there's no cell phones allowed while you are at the concourse,
like
at the stadium. Like, think about it. Like, people will go to comedians and they'll lock their phones in. We could do this. Wouldn't the NBA finals be that much better if everyone in the stands just didn't have their cell phones on them, couldn't check their cell phone 24/7 and actually paid attention to the game?
Yes, absolutely. I think it's one of the greatest things that the Masters has implemented, because you just get lost in the tournament for however long you're actually there, and you've got nothing to take your focus away. You've got nothing to take your attention away. You're not trying to capture everything on video. You're just enjoying the moment for what it is. And I know I sound like a purist, and I know I sound like get off my lawn guy, and I'm getting older and older by the day, and I'm seeing more and more gray by the day. But I do think that there's a beauty in just being lost in a moment.
Chris, big matchup tonight with the Knicks for a standpoint of seeding in the – well, not for the Cavs so much, but I'm saying just in terms of, like, figuring out the final seeding of the Eastern Conference, that this one matters in some respects for the Knicks to either stay at the three spot or drop to four. We had a caller earlier who's a pretty famous caller here at the station, Mr. Buckley, who's a big Knicks fan, and he believes this theory that the Knicks are going to tank this game tonight so that they can slide to the four seed and then get a better chance to play the Cavs. But on the flip side of that, should the Cavs lose this game tonight to try to avoid the Knicks?
No, I don't think the Cavs are in a situation, guys, where they have to avoid anybody. Because I just don't think they're the kind of team where there's a clear-cut weakness or a clear-cut problem that the other team presents to them. Like, 2 years ago, I wrote about this. I talked about this. Players got so pissed with me. And members of the organization kept texting me and calling me, telling me to stop writing this. But it was true, and I heard it from enough places that I wrote it. 2 years ago, there was a clear weakness on this basketball team. Like, they didn't have a bench, and physical teams that rebound the heck out of the ball, that protect the paint, they bothered the Cavs. So everybody knew 2 years ago that the Knicks were a terrible matchup for them, and that their chances of getting out of the first round, in large part, tied into were they going to face the Knicks or not. And they did. Like, they would have rather faced Brooklyn so that they would have had a better chance of getting out of the first round and advancing further in the tournament. That was a no-brainer because everybody knew that the Knicks were a problem for them. Last year, I think even though the Cavs were the clearly superior team and they had more talent, I think there was a belief that Orlando was problematic for them because of the length, because of the size, because of the physicality, because of the bench edge that they had. And that kind of played itself out because it was a tough, grueling 7-game series that took a lot out of the Cavs physically. But I just don't think there's that kind of thing that the Cavs would face, whether it's anybody other than Boston, that would be such a stylistic problem or such a matchup problem for them that they're in any kind of position to say, oh my God, we were the number one seed. We won 60-plus games. We had one of the best offenses in NBA history. But if we face up against X team, oh boy, we might not have a chance to get to the conference finals. We might not have a chance to get to the NBA finals. This is a different team. This is a different makeup. These are evolved players. These are more mature players. They've got a coach that they believe in. So I think the scuttlebutt that I've heard is that the Knicks want to avoid Boston. That if they drop to 4, they feel like they have a better chance of advancing, not because they match up better with the Cavs, but because Boston is Boston and they're the reigning champions.
Chris, the defense over the past couple months hasn't been as good. They're 12th right now in the NBA. And if you go and look at NBA Finals champions, you know, 21 Bucks was not a very good defense. The 0-1 Lakers, not a very good defense. Even the 2016 Cavs, they were right there at 10th in the NBA. But it's very rare you see someone sitting at 12th allowing the points per game that the Cavs are. Is it just offset by how historically great this offense is? Or is there some cause for concern that maybe the defense has made them vulnerable?
It's not just the last month, guys, and that's the thing that I keep going back to. If it was just a month, if it was just 2 weeks, if it was just the last 14 games, however you want to characterize it, you could say blip on the radar, short sample size. It's been since January. Since January, the Cavs are middle of the pack in defense, like right around middle of the pack. That's an extended time. That's 3 months of basketball to not play to the standard that you hold yourself to. That's the thing. The Cavs will tell you, everybody says it, we're a defense-first team. That's our identity. That's our foundation. That's how we have to win. To the point that I even asked Kenny Atkinson the other day, I said, you guys have the number one offense in the NBA. You've been number one in offense all throughout the season. It's a historically great offense. What's it going to take for you to say, no, we're not a defense team? Like, we're not, because the numbers don't support that. And he said basically that it's a mentality that he wants the guys to have. And all the players said it's a mentality that they need to have because they understand how important defense is. They understand how important defense is to winning championships. And they truly believe that that is going to be something that separates them in the playoffs, that when they have Evan Mobley playing more minutes, when they have Jared Allen playing more minutes, when they have DeAndre Hunter and his versatility and stuff like that, that it's going to allow them to get back to the defense that they have shown, the ceiling of the defense that they have shown at various points, even though it hasn't been consistent enough. It's one thing to say that, but there hasn't been enough evidence of that over the last couple of months that I do think it's something that they need to find and they need to focus on and they need to take a little bit more seriously rather than just assuming, hey, the playoffs are going to roll around and we're going to flip the switch. Like, what if you try to flip the switch and it doesn't come on?
I guess that was going to be my next question, Chris, was kind of what you alluded to there at the end. Like, when LeBron was here, we talked all the time about the flipping the switch idea where once they got to the playoffs, they could kind of coast, and then they knew once they got there, LeBron just took the team to another level where they knew they could get through the playoff sort of tournament that forms. But with this team, they've generally been about, like, we're going to play hard every night. Like, we want to establish good habits. We aren't just going to try to rely on getting to the playoffs and then letting it happen that way. So do you think that's something that they can sort of correct despite the last 3 months of not necessarily playing the best defense?
I think to some degree, yes. I also think that they have defensive deficiencies that they have to be cognizant of when the playoffs roll around, especially when it depends on a certain matchup or a couple of matchups. But the reason why I say yes is because what I've seen a lot over the last couple of months is mental breakdowns and not following the scouting report and a lack of focus and a lack of attention to detail. And that goes into a lot of different things, right? It goes into the grind of an 82-game schedule, being mentally exhausted at the end of it. It goes into a lack of general care toward the end of the season because there wasn't anything that they were really chasing. It goes into the fact that they had some guys resting. They were trying different things, putting different guys in different positions, attempting different things on the defensive end. All of that ties into it. It's not excusing it, but it's explaining why some of those things might be possible and why they also might be correctable. Now it comes down to a personnel thing. And this is something that I've been saying for the last couple of weeks. You know, it's not to single one guy out or anything along those lines. But the truth is, given the personnel that the Cavs have, teams are going to relentlessly attack Darius Garland. It's just going to happen. That's life in the playoffs. It happened to Steph Curry. It happens to Trae Young. It happens to Tyrese Halliburton. It's going to happen to Darius Garland. Because when you think about trying to attack the Cavs defense, that's probably what you consider your most consistent pathway to offensive success. So when Darius switches, and the Cavs believe in switching, they've been one of the switch-heaviest teams on defense throughout the course of this regular season, and Kenny Atkinson believes that that's a very effective scheme when you get into the playoffs. If the Cavs are going to give those switches, then it's going to be Darius Garland trying to hold his own one-on-one in what is an advantageous matchup for the offense, not for the Cavs' defense. And then it has to be discipline around Darius. It has to be trust in Darius that he's going to, you know, not stop guys, but hold his own well enough that the rest of the defense doesn't get compromised. So this is something that Darius is going to have to deal with when it comes to the playoffs. And I think there is a level of readiness that you wonder about when it comes to Darius and how the mental challenge of everything that's going to be thrown at him while he's on defense, how, if at all, that's going to affect him on the offensive end of the floor and how that's going to affect him mentally, because that wears on you as a player, especially when you're talking about seven games in a series and then another series, then another series. For however long the Cavs go, Darius is going to be viewed as one of the weak links, and that's a tough thing for any young player to have to deal with.
Chris, we see it in baseball all the time where the manager just wants to basically get himself ejected. Do you feel like Atkinson yesterday, was that what he was going for? Maybe used as a spark of sorts?
I don't think it was necessarily a spark. I think it was backing up the things that he has said, guys, throughout the course of the season. What he said is 1-15, 1-18, it doesn't matter who you are. And when you go to bat for Tristan Thompson, guy number 13, 14 on this roster, as if he's Donovan Mitchell or as if he's Evan Mobley, that's something that resonates in the locker room. That's backing up the things that you have been saying throughout the course of the year. That's backing up the things that you want the players to believe in, that you want the players to buy into. So I think part of it was, you know, this is Tristan Thompson. This is a 14-year pro. This is an NBA champion. He deserves to be treated better. The other part of it was, this is Tristan Thompson, who is very, very meaningful for our roster, despite the role, the limited role that he has on the court. And I'm going to go to bat for him in a game that people seem to think is meaningless. And I think that resonated with a lot of the guys in the locker room. And I think it just shows, you know, the touch that Kenny has with this group, where, you know, if you talk about what's going on in Denver and all of the commentary coming out of Denver and the preferential treatment and stuff like that, Kenny communicates 1-18 the same way, no matter who you are. Kenny believes in 1-18, no matter who you are, the same kind of way. And that's a rare quality to have, and I think it's something that has separated him.
Chris, I don't necessarily think there's any reason to be concerned about any of the teams that the Cavs could play in the first round. I think everyone feels pretty confidently that they'd be able to manage any of those series. But is there one potential first-round matchup that you think would maybe give the Cavs the most trouble?
I guess you would default to Miami simply because they have Tiger blood and they have, you know, Eric Spoelstra, who is one of the greatest playoff chess masters, and Tyler Hero can go and have a very, very explosive series, and Bam Adebayo is an all-star caliber player. Like, every time you want to, and Andrew Wiggins always has career games against the Cavs. Every time you want to count out Miami, they remind you why you can't. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But then there's the other side of it of, there's a reason why you were trying to count out Miami in the first place. Because there was a level of bad basketball being played. There was a level of inconsistency throughout the regular season that was being played. So I guess you default there, but I honestly don't think that there's a team that the Cavs could see in the first round that would take them past a gentleman's sweep. I think they're clearly superior to all of those teams, and I think they're going to be able to show that when the playoffs roll around.
Chris, fantastic insight as always. You know, we appreciate you giving us a few minutes, and we always love your work over there at Cleveland.com. Enjoy the rest of the Masters, and after DeChambeau wins, just make his way to his YouTube channel. We'll have a great time.
Thanks, Chris.
You got it, guys. Anytime. See you.